It's the introduction by U A Mong, translator. It's a Leka Sutta. This book is the English translation of a series of talks which the Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw gave on the Saleka Sutta during the years 1969 to 70. It is an elaboration of an important teaching of the Buddha in Majjhima Nikaya. The Pali text of the sutta covers only 8 pages, but the transcripts of the 12 talks came out in a 2-volume publication in Burmese. This is no wonder, for as is well known to everyone who has heard his talks or read his writings, the Venerable Sayadaw is very thorough and careful about small things or details, and he spares no pains to make the Buddha's teaching clear to all people. In his introduction to the sutta, the Venerable Sayadaw says, "The self-training leading to this goal, the lessening of defilements or kilesa, forms the subject of Saleka Sutta. The sutta is beneficial to meditators and non-meditators alike. It is helpful to all those who wish to overcome immoral desires and cultivate good, wholesome desires. In other words, this sutta is not meant only for those who possess a high level of intellectual or spiritual capacity." Here, the Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw presents a sharp contrast to some Buddhist teachers who wish to confine the higher teachings of the Buddha to the intellectual elite. Once a Sayadaw is reported to have said, "People memorize Satipatthana Sutta. They make it as a basis for Vipassana practice. All this is ridiculous. It is not in the least proper for the common people to study Satipatthana teaching." This skepticism is to be much deplored, for it is largely responsible for ignorance, or at best superficial knowledge of the Buddha's teaching, even in a predominantly Buddhist country like Burma. Of course, we should have respect for the Buddha's teaching, but it does not follow that we should regard it as too sacred and profound for ordinary people. If the Dharma is supposed to be above the comprehension of the common men, the Buddha would not have proclaimed it to mankind. Some insist that the higher doctrines are intended only for the bhikkhus, but this view is not in accord with the Pitaka and the commentaries, which mention cases of lay disciples who attained advanced stages on the holy path through the practice of Satipatthana Vipassana. In point of fact, the Dharma of Saleka Sutta is not like the Vinaya rules, which the Buddha laid down exclusively for the bhikkhus, nor is it intended only for the lay followers, as is the Singhalavada Sutta of Digha Nikaya. The sutta represents the essence of the Dharma that is universally applicable. The study of the sutta will benefit everyone because it points out the best way of dealing with moral evils that have bedeviled mankind through the ages and led to much suffering. It speaks volumes for the high quality of the Venerable Sayadaw's sharp intellect that he brings home to us important points implicit in the teachings of the Buddha, but which are never explicitly mentioned in the Pitaka or the commentaries. Thus, the Venerable Sayadaw broke new grounds in the teaching of Vipassana when he advised his yogi disciples to note the rising and falling of the abdomen in meditational practice. This teaching has run the gauntlet of criticism on the ground that it lacks scriptural authority, that it is against the traditional instruction of Vipassana teachers. But there can be no denying the fact that it agrees with the Satipatthana Sutta, that it is but a corollary of the Buddha's instruction about the contemplation of the body, kaya, kaya, nupasi, viharati. Despite all the criticism, the practice has benefited many yogis in Burma, as well as in other countries. Saleka Sutta is hard to understand, and but for a very learned and highly experienced Vipassana teacher like the Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw, it is equally hard to explain clearly the teaching of the Buddha in the suttas. It deals with jhana, magga, pala, etc., And needless to say, today there are many Buddhists who do not know what these varieties of religious experience are all about. In fact, even some yogis who practice vipassana are not free from misconceptions about them. As the Venerable Sayadaw points out, many of them meditate in the hope of having some unusual experience, and they regard any such experience as proof of spiritual attainment. Indeed, ignorance about vipassana practice is widespread. Many people do not distinguish it from jhana. They confuse its goal with its byproducts, such as visions, rapture, psychic powers, and so forth. It is said that an arhat is necessarily a man who can fly in the air, and this old established belief prevails even among college-educated Buddhists. No wonder that nowadays there are bogus meditation teachers who unscrupulously exploit mass ignorance and credulity for their own ends. Real vipassana experience may defy understanding and description, but the Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw's discourse on Salaika Sutta leaves no room for confusion or misconception about the goal, which is no other than the extinction of defilements. Childer's Dictionary of the Pali Language translates Salaika as the destruction of kilesa, and the Venerable Sayadaw describes Salaika practice that forms the basis of vipassana as the way of life designed to root out defilement. The Venerable Sayadaw's discourse is those highly informative, illuminating, and ayuindative, and it will be, I don't know what that means, and it will be invaluable to all those who seek enlightenment about the Buddha's way to the end of defilements and suffering. Discourse on Salaika Sutta. A true follower of the Buddha should have few desires. He should be content with what he has, and he should try to lessen his defilements. He should have little desire for material possession or attendance. He should not want to speak of his accomplishments in the study of scriptures or in the practice of meditation. He should keep the depth of his learning or his spiritual attainments to himself. A true Arya, the noble one, does not reveal his spiritual insight, although he wants to share it with other people. It is only the religious imposter who calls himself an Arya or an Arahat. Contentment is also essential to spiritual development. One should be satisfied with whatever one has, whether good or bad. Equally essential is the effort to lessen one's defilements, kilesa. The self-training leading to this goal forms the subject of Salaika Sutta. The sutta is beneficial to meditators and non-meditators alike. It is helpful to all those who wish to overcome immoral desires and cultivate good, wholesome desires. The questions of Tera Chunda. On one occasion, while the Buddha was residing at the Jetavana monastery at Sarvati, Maha Chunda, the Arahat, who was the younger brother of Sariputta, entered a transcendental state of mind called Pala Samabhati. The Arahat usually spent his time in one of these states when he had nothing else to do, such as discussion or preaching of the Dharma. Sometimes he might abide in jhana samapatti or nirodha samapatti, where all the mental activities are suspended. Or he might dwell in arahata samapatti, that keeps him absorbed in the peace of Nibbana. After passing away the whole day in this state of mind, the Terechunda approached the Buddha in the evening, and after paying due respects, he asked the following question. O Buddha, there are many false views in regard to the theory of ego, of atta, or the theory of the world, loka. O Buddha, does a monk dispel these false views or completely renounce them just as he begins to reflect on them? The question needs explanation. Before the rise of Buddhism, a being was called atta, or loka, the world. There are three lokas: satta loka, the world of beings; sankhara loka, the phenomenal world; and okasa loka, the physical world. Atta and loka mean essentially the same thing, a living being. False views about atta. Some people regard the physical body as atta, or ego, or soul. For example, when they bend, stretch, or move their hands or feet, they believe that it is they themselves who perform these movements. On this view, atta is identified with the physical body. According to some people, atta is not the human body, but atta includes the body, and its relation to the latter is like the relation of a tree to its shadow. The movement of any part of the body is done not by atta, but by the body that belongs to it. The movement occurs in accordance with the desire of atta. This view identifies atta with the mind. Then there is the view that the physical body depends on atta, just like the scent of a flower depending on the flower. This view too makes mind identical with atta. Some people believe that atta is inherent in the body. They say that atta pervades the whole body, its size being dependent on the size of the body. Some say that atta lies quietly in the cavity of the heart, like the flame of a fire burning in a calm atmosphere. These beliefs about atta loom large in ancient Indian literature, and similar beliefs about the soul are to be found in other countries. The belief in atta does not prevail in a Buddhist country like Burma, because Buddhism rejects it. Yet some people still believe in the existence of atta, or spirit, in the body. Some women speak of the spirit being scared or seized by the devil. Many people describe atta as a living entity that enters or leaves the body. There are four kinds of ego belief that center on the physical body. The first belief regards the body as the ego, while the other three beliefs identify it with the mind. Or the latter three beliefs may have nothing to do with mind or body, because today those who believe in the ego insist that the ego is neither the body nor the mind. Despite all their negations, their belief centers on the mind and the body. Similarly, there are four kinds of ego belief in connection with feeling. One, the belief that identifies the ego with feeling. It is I, the ego, who feels pain. It is I, ego, who feels happy or unhappy. 2. The belief that the ego is not identical with feeling, but that it has the latter as its property, as feeling as its property. 3. The belief that makes the feeling dependent on the ego. And 4. The belief that makes the ego dependent on feeling. Likewise, we have 4 kinds of ego belief in regard to perception. Another 4 ego beliefs in regard to the sankharas. And still another 4 ego beliefs bearing on sense door consciousness, vijnana. In short, there are 4 kinds of ego belief corresponding to each of the 4 khandhas. And so we have altogether 20 kinds of belief about the ego. These ego beliefs are called atta ditti or sakaya ditti. Ordinary people or worldlings are usually not free from the ego belief. The only difference is that some are dominated by it, while some do not hold fast to it. We can get rid of it completely only when we attain the first stage of holiness, sota patimagga. Theories of loka. Here, loka is another term for atta. There were 8 different theories about loka current in India in the time of the Buddha. 1. The first theory is that loka, or atta, is indestructible, that it exists forever. This is the eternity view, sasata ditti. Its adherents hold that although the physical body is destroyed at death, its essence, or atta, does not share its fate. The atta passes on to another body and continues to exist there. It is never subject to destruction. This view is somewhat like the belief of some Burmese people who have no knowledge of Buddhism. For them, conception marks the arrival of a living being in the mother's womb, while death means the departure of the ego entity for a new abode. Those who are firmly attached to this belief do not practice meditation, and so they cannot hope for spiritual progress. The belief is indeed a major impediment on the way to Nibbana. It's not, however, a deep-seated belief among Burmese Buddhists. They accept the teaching that life is devoid of a permanent atta, that it is only a succession of cause and effect, or of psychophysical states. They believe that the psychophysical process comes to an end with the extinction of its cause, the defilements consequent on the attainment of the 4 stages of knowledge through meditation. The eternity belief of the Burmese people, therefore, does not pose a serious threat to spiritual progress. Yet even though it is not deep-rooted, one cannot remove it completely until one becomes a sotapanna. 2. Opposed to the eternity belief is nihilism, ucheda ditti. According to this belief, the ego entity only exists until the dissolution of the body, after which it is annihilated. In the time of the Buddha, there were only a few people who held this belief, but today the belief is gaining ground because non-Buddhists have put forward specious arguments for it. They reject the idea of a future life on the ground that it does not admit of empirical investigation. Nihilism has become popular probably because of their persuasive art of writing and the strong human desire to enjoy life fully here and now. In reality, there is no immortal soul or annihilation after death, or there is neither immortality nor complete annihilation. Buddhism denies the ego entity and recognizes only the psychophysical process, conditioned by the law of cause and effect. There is only the continuity of cause and effect, such as ignorance causing karma formations, sankhara. The sankhara, in turn, causing consciousness for a new life and so forth. Death is not a mystery, for it means the final dissolution of the psychophysical organism that is subject to the process of ceaseless disintegration. Death is not, however, annihilation. Because of defilements and conditioned by karma, physical and mental events take place in unbroken succession as before, in a new place and a new life. Rebirth is neither the transmigration of the soul nor the transfer of consciousness and corporeality from one life to another. The physical and mental phenomena arise continually and always pass away. It is not the eye consciousness that sees, nor the ear consciousness that hears. Each consciousness arises at the appropriate moment and passes away immediately. There is, however, a causal connection between any two consecutive units of consciousness. Likewise, death destroys completely all corporeality and consciousness. But there arise new psychophysical phenomena of existence in a new life, and these are causally related to those in the previous life. The rebirth consciousness and other psychophysical factors contributing to the new life arise as a result of the attachment to any sign or vision, nimitta, relating to his karma or future life at the moment of one's death. Thus, there are only physical and mental phenomena in terms of cause and effect. Since there is no ego identity, it is a mistake to believe in an immortal soul that survives death, and it is equally wrong to speak of annihilation. The psychophysical process will continue so long as it is not free from defilements. It will come to an end completely only in the case of an accomplished arahat who passes away after having been liberated from all attachments. The decease of the arahat or his parinibbana is not annihilation. It means only the complete cessation of suffering inherent in the psychophysical process. This process should be studied through Buddhist scriptures and through the practice of meditation. Three, according to the third theory, Atta or Loka is eternal and also non-eternal. This theory assumes the eternity of the creator of the universe, but denies this attribute to his creatures. It is labeled Ekacha Sasata Vada in Brahmajala Sutta. Although the theory says that most creatures are impermanent, it does not accept annihilation at death. It holds that Atta transmigrates to another abode after the dissolution of the physical body. Hence, it belongs to the group of eternity beliefs. Four, the fourth theory says that Loka, or Atta, is neither eternal nor non-eternal. It is hard to understand this view. It is a speculation that makes no sense. Since it says nothing definitely about the Atta, it is also called Amara Vikepa Vada, Amara being the name of a species of fish that is hard to grasp. Well, I think that's eel wriggling. It's the eel wriggler who avoids answering. Yeah, it's a speculation that makes no sense. Eel wriggler. The fifth theory says that Atau or Loka is finite. In other words, a living being is a world of its own. The Atta, which pervades the body of a being, is limited in size, so that of the respective body. Thus, the Atta of a human being is supposed to be, at most, a fathom in height and from 2.5 feet to 3 feet in girth. Some say that Atta lies in the cavity of the heart, and that its size depends on that of its habitat. It is also said that Atta is as small as an electron, Parama Numru, when it is in search of a new abode. 6. The next theory is that Atta or Loka is infinitely great. It rejects the idea of an individual soul in each living being and holds that every being is a part of the great soul, Paramatta, of God who created the universe. The Paramatta is infinitely great and pervades the whole universe, and so Atta too is infinitely great. These theories, which insist on the infinity or otherwise of Atta, are to be found in modern Indian religious books. Buddhist commentaries attribute them to illusion about the size of the counter image, Patibhaganimitta, that arises during the practice of kusina concentration and passes for Atta or Loka. But the illusion occurs only to a few individuals at a higher stage of jhana or mental absorption. The beliefs that I have mentioned are those of common people. Some believe that Atta or Loka is finite as well as infinite. This is somewhat like the Ekacha Sasatavada theory. 3. It apparently means that some, that is the Attas of those created by God, are finite, while the Paramatta of God is infinite. 8. Again, some say that Atta or Loka is neither finite nor infinite. This too is a nonsensical speculation like theory 4 and Amara Vikepavada that gives no definite answer. All these theories are absurd because they revolve about Atta, which does not exist. They make confusion worse, confounded, just like the speculations about the non-existent horns of the hare or the fur of the tortoise. Yet these theories appealed to those who were not the followers of the Buddha. So the terror Mahachunda asked the Buddha whether a monk can completely overcome these beliefs just at the beginning of his meditation. In other words, the question of Terachunda was whether the attainment of concentration, samadhi, or joy, piti, or the seeing of light at the early stage of meditation, meant the elimination of false views about loka or atta. There was ground for raising such a question, Some people believed that concentration, samadhi, or mental absorption, jhana, or joy, piti, or other varieties of experience that are termed upakilesa, defilements of insight, would suffice to ensure the conquest of false beliefs and the attainment of arahatship. Chunda's questions was designed to enlighten such deluded and conceited people. The practice of meditation has an air of holiness, and any experience that is somewhat unusual is likely to be mistaken for an extraordinary insight. In the absence of a good guide or a proper teacher, the yogi tends to overestimate himself and have illusions about his spiritual attainments on the basis of his trivial and slightly unusual experience. This is not peculiar to the present age. Even in the time of the Buddha, among those who practiced meditation under the expert guidance of the Blessed One and the great arahats like Sariputta, who gave instructions in both theory and practice, there were some yogis who harbored delusions because of their unusual experiences. It is safe to assume that nowadays the number of such yogis may be very great. In reality, the attainment of spiritual goal means discrimination between corporeality and consciousness, realization of their constant arising and passing away, and clear understanding of the impermanence, anicca, unsatisfactoriness or suffering, dukkha, and insubstantiality or non-self, anatta, of existence. Above all, the yogi must have illumination as regards the nature of phenomenal existence, its state of flux and dissolution. Illumination resulting from disenchantment, weariness, and equanimity. It is only when he has these illuminations or insight knowledge, jnana, that the yogi can see nibbana. It is only when he thus sees nibbana, at least on the first path of holiness, that he can get rid of the false views about atta or loka. End of that reading.